Hello, this is Pastor Pete Beck III from LifeNet in Burlington, North Carolina. Welcome to today's podcast entitled Ferreting Out Legalism, Part 3, The Blame Game. This is the third article in this series entitled Ferreting Out Legalism. In the first one, I took a look at how legalism attempts to measure spirituality instead of trusting in the finished work of Christ. The second article examined how legalism seeks to manipulate and control people through fear. This one focuses on how legalism focuses blame on individuals and groups in order to promote the false narrative that it is possible to earn our salvation. Psychologists recognize that we often deride and malign others in an attempt to bolster our own position or image. We sometimes project on others the things for which we are guilty ourselves. This is a form of denial. We imagine that we are guiltless, or at least better than the person we judge, and feel comfortable accusing them without realizing that in so doing, we condemn ourselves. Paul highlighted this sinful tendency in his letter to the church in Rome. Romans 2:1 reads, "You may think you can condemn such people, but you are just as bad, and you have no excuse. When you say that they're wicked and should be punished, you are condemning yourself. For you who judge others do these very same things." Our propensity to judge others for the things for which we are also guilty reveals that we have not accepted the truth about our own sinfulness. Jesus told a parable, Matthew 18:21 through 35, about a servant who owed his master an enormous debt for which he had no means to pay it back. Rather than condemn this bankrupt servant to debtor's prison, the master freely forgave the debt. Apparently, this was an affront to his pride, and the servant refused to accept that he was unable to pay back the debt. He immediately set about trying to do just that by collecting much smaller debts that others owed him. When a fellow servant was unable to come up with the money owed, the forgiven servant had him thrown into debtor's prison. When the master heard about this, he became furious and had the previously forgiven man also placed in the same prison. The root of the first servant's problem was his pride that kept him from seeing that he was a spiritual pauper who had to fully depend on his master's mercy. Matthew 5:3 says, "God blesses those who are poor, spiritual paupers, and realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs." We undercut the mercy shown to us when we refuse to forgive. By default, our pride makes us all gravitate toward legalism. The false narrative is that we can improve ourselves and become acceptable to God if we just try hard enough. Some of us have been engaged in a lifelong remediation project in the hope that one day, hopefully soon, we will finally arrive at our destination, perfection. The Bible teaches us that this is the surest way to frustration, anger, and depression. Pursuing perfection can totally demoralize us or even turn us into mean-spirited, self-righteous judges. The more we try to measure up to the demands of God's righteousness using only our own resources, the greater will be our failure. Paul discovered this and wrote about it in his letter to the church in Rome, chapter 7, verses 14 through 25. "Until we come to realize how bankrupt we are, we will feel comfortable accusing and condemning ourselves, our leaders, the church, and anyone else. And by so doing, unwittingly ally ourselves with Satan, who is called the accuser." Revelation 12:10. Misery loves company. The price we pay. When we judge others in an accusatory and condemning way, we heap judgment upon ourselves. Romans 2, 2 and 3 read, "And we know that God in his justice will punish anyone who does such things, that is, judge others. Since you judge others for doing these things, why do you think you can avoid God's judgment when you do the same things?" Jesus also warned us about the flashback effect of improperly judging others. He said, "Do not judge others, and you will not be judged, for you will be treated as you treat others, and the standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged." Matthew 7, 1 and 2. No one likes to be judged, yet we often do it to others without regard for the negative consequences. Judging others restricts them and us. Judging invites God's judgment into our own lives. Judging others strips away our joy and peace. When we judge someone, we lose the ability to help them or be helped by them. When we judge and condemn those in authority, we may actually open the door for divine judgment to fall upon us. I am truly concerned about those who call themselves Christians who seem to feel very comfortable railing against our president. Acts 23:5. If you're not familiar with the stories of those who decided it was fine to attack and criticize Moses, you should read those accounts. Number 16 is a good place to start. It is very sobering. Let me give a couple of examples. Sometimes I'm surprised when church leaders say that the current broken state of society is the church's fault. This presupposes that if we do everything right, everyone else will also do the right thing, which is totally false. Jesus did all the right things when it came to discipling his apostles, and yet one of them betrayed him. It certainly was not Jesus' fault. God created Adam and Eve and gave them a perfect environment. Nevertheless, at the first opportunity, they betrayed their creator to follow Satan. Was that God's fault? Of course not. Perfect parents, if there ever were such a thing, cannot guarantee that their children will turn out well. The false narrative is that if we can perform well enough, we can guarantee an outcome. If we accept the lie that the church is responsible to change the world through its performance, we fall into a legalistic trap that will lead to frustration, demoralization, or self-righteousness. Some people teach that God always physically heals us when we ask him. They cite scriptures that bolster this position and insist that God is always true to his word. Therefore, if we do not receive our healing, the fault must be in us. Elaborate schemes are developed to ensure that we receive our healing. People are taught to deny that they are sick, since God has healed them already. They are encouraged to repeat over and over the verses that promise healing in the hope that faith will grow and God will be persuaded by our persistence. I remember once when I heard that the family of a man dying from cancer would admit no one who did not hold the same belief about positive confessing of healing. People who properly discerned that it was his time to die could have consoled and encouraged him as he approached the threshold of eternity, but they were not allowed in. I thank God for his promises. I thank him that Jesus paid the price for my healing. I believe that we should trust him to do just what he promised. But I also realize that it is in his discretion how he dispenses his grace and gifts. Everyone dies eventually, and God knows when it is our time. When that moment arrives, nothing's going to stop it. Likewise, before it is his time for us to die, nothing can take us out by stealth. Surrendering our lives and health to a loving and sovereign God is the surest way to peace and being able to discern what the Spirit is speaking to us about our situation. You can read more about this important topic in my book entitled Seeing God Smile, which is available on Amazon. Conclusion. Life is so much easier and more joyful when we admit that we are spiritual paupers who depend on the mercy of God and have no right or business condemning others. There is a proper form of judgment, but it never includes condemnation. It is important that we refrain from judging ourselves too. We get enough of that from the devil and other people.